Welcome to HBW's Over the Counter podcast. I'm David Ridley, and I'll be chatting with industry experts and insiders about the latest trends, issues, and intelligence in consumer healthcare. In this episode, HBW Insights Europe and US editors bring their expertise to bear on the current trend towards standalone OTC companies in global consumer health. We look at four major players: Haleon, which separated from GSK almost 2 years ago; Kenvue, soon to celebrate its first anniversary as a new company; Sanofi, which has announced it will be exiting the consumer healthcare market by divesting its OTC business; and Bayer, which has decided to buck the trend, holding onto its consumer health division. We also discuss some of the possible advantages of becoming a standalone company, for example, in leaning into a wider concept of self-care. Welcome back, Malcolm and Tom, to the Over the Counter podcast. How are you both doing?
Very good, David. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, good, Dave. Thanks. Good to speak to you as always.
Yeah, I'm excited about chatting with you both today. We're going to talk a bit about the divestments, something we've talked about in the past before. We've just had a series of end-of-year results, haven't we? I mean, I think maybe it'd be good just to start with a kind of general question. Why are consumer healthcare companies separating from their owners? Why are we seeing OTC businesses spinning out and becoming independent? I don't know if Malcolm, you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you, David. It's better to say that the pharma companies are spinning out, or letting go of their consumer health companies. It really wasn't up to the consumer health businesses at all. Consistent and prevailing thought has been that the remaining business for the pharmas, whether it be med tech and pharma, or all bio and pharma, whatever it is not consumer health, could operate better, more efficiently, and produce higher margins if it didn't have this third business, this consumer health business, hanging on. The large companies knew that if they did an IPO, they could generate a good amount of cash with that, and they could also, if they wanted, retain some ownership, some stake in the consumer health business. But I don't want to cross into Tom's area, but because Bayer, of course, has not done it. And I think their thinking is, well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And so if I extrapolate that back to Kenvue and Haleon, if the pharma and medtech business is broke, don't get rid of the other consumer health business and try to fix it. I mean, if you should be able to fix it. And I think that, that this is going to work out in the long run, but I suspect there are a lot of doubters now about whether they made the right move by doing those.
Thanks, Malcolm. I mean, Tom, do you agree with Malcolm's point about this coming more from the parent companies than it is from the consumer healthcare companies spinning out?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, those are the bigger businesses. Those are the main focus of these companies anyway. They're always going to be trying to look to maximize the pharma business. That's the thing that's generating the most cash, most returns for shareholders. But I think it's important to note that this is, can be seen as these moves can be seen as beneficial for the consumer health businesses, because consumer health as it is now is not what it once was. Previously it's purely OTC drug, and it was more actually aligned with the pharma businesses, whereas now, as consumer health kind of expanded, it's moved into like supplements, cosmetic space, it's now kind of coming more close to the FMCG industry. Which means, consumer health companies need to be able to innovate faster, respond to changing consumer preferences. But that's not always going to be possible when you're kind of part of a larger operation that's been designed to develop prescription pharmaceuticals. So I think it's important to note that there's a benefit to pharma businesses, as Malcolm rightly says, can generate funds which can then be put back into R&D. But I think, kind of as we're seeing, I think the few companies that have gone it alone, they are finding there's benefits to not have it not being attached to this big pharma behemoth as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is the rationale, isn't it, Malcolm? The self-care kind of philosophy. It's a broader business now. Wellness, etc. There is that element as well, isn't there, of something that they're moving into and maybe are liberated in that respect.
But by all means, and as Tom said, it's not the self-care of yesterday, self-care businesses of yesterday. So Kenvue, Haleon, Sanofi, and Bayer have, they have a lot of opportunity for growth and a lot of opportunity to expand. If not expand their business, at least expand their revenues. But it doesn't, it doesn't happen automatically. I think they're all finding that there's a lot of competition in the market. Consumers are always, to one degree or another, looking for the lesser expensive product, and so there's always going to be competition on price and on the type of product you have.
That's a nice segue there, Malcolm. We can maybe look at some of the companies and how they're getting on, whether they have already spun out or not. Let's start with Haleon, the first company to become, well, I say that out of the four that we're talking to, but perhaps the biggest GSK consumer health becoming Haleon. How is Haleon getting on, Malcolm?
Reviewed their results in preparation for this, David, and it looks like they're doing all right. Consumer health has lower margins than pharma, so there's not going to be impressive results every quarter for their net income and their net sales. But they seem to be doing all right. I also took a look at their share price. Their share price for 3 months has been kind of volatile. I don't know why. Whereas Kenvue's, on the other hand, went down quite a bit after they reported their results, and now it's been steadily going up for 3 months. Haleon, certainly there was nothing to lose by being the first to go in this area, and they have a large portfolio. It probably is, if one were to do a objective analysis between it and Kenvue, there'd probably be a similarity in size and the number of products they have and the number of SKUs, the number of stock keeping units they have in their consumer health businesses.
Tom, you've been following Haleon as well, obviously UK-based company. Have you got anything to add?
No, pretty much agree with Malcolm's assessment. I mean, it's still early days. I suppose in one way you could say it's an advantage of being the kind of first move of these companies to do this, but then also another way a disadvantage because there's no clear path to follow. But they're the biggest player in the market anyway, and there's lots of opportunities, which I think we'll kind of get into for further consolidation for them to get bigger. So, it looks to be going quite well. I mean, it's certainly not gone, you wouldn't say it had gone badly. It's not become, immediately clear that this company or companies like them can't stand on their own. So obviously, it's, over the long term, it's going to remain to be seen. But I think they'll be pleased with the start they've got off to, definitely.
Yeah, it seems to me that they've had a pretty good start. And then Kenvue, you mentioned as well, Malcolm, having been J&J Consumer Health. How are Kenvue doing in comparison? They haven't been a standalone for as long.
No, they haven't. They've had a few fits and turns. They had to redo their leadership in the U.S. and in Latin America. They're really seeing that. And Thabo Mangon, the CEO, has been very frank about it in various presentations that they're not getting the job done. You know, the onus is on them to put their product in front of consumers and put it in front of the right consumers in the right places. So I think there may have been some assumption that just because of the size of Kenvue, Johnson & Johnson's consumer business, you know, which was humongous, that they would hit the ground running, you know, without any slips. But they have just that size, and in fact, that size has been kind of a detriment, and they're really finding they have yet to find their pace, but I suspect they will soon.
I mean, one of the things I noticed when I was looking at the results was the difficulty maybe Kenvue have had of establishing the brand, because you call yourself a new company. I mean, J&J is perhaps much more of a household brand. Kenvue is a completely new brand, obviously, but they maybe haven't quite communicated this new identity to consumers yet.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I think they have Tylenol and Motrin and Listerine and all these iconic brand names. And I think that, like I said, that's a good point, that they may have underestimated the connection that consumers have for those brand names to Johnson and Johnson, and they need to build up the brand Kenvue in consumers' minds.
So the other two that we've mentioned haven't spun out. We've got Sanofi and Bayer. Tom, do you want to take us through those two? I don't know which one you want to start with.
Yeah, sure. So start with looking at Sanofi. So they announced in October that they will be following the path set by Haleon and Kenvue, and will spin off their OTC. Well, they'll separate from their OTC business at the end of this year at the earliest. Still, the manner in which they'll do so still yet to be worked out, and the exact timings. But this is something that we've been anticipating for a fairly long time now. As for the past 4 years, Sanofi Consumer Health has been operating as a standalone business within the wider Sanofi company. And in that time, they've set up dedicated R&D, manufacturing, IT resources, and while at the same time also looking to really aggressively streamline the portfolio. And they've offloaded over 100 brands, I think, kind of in anticipation of this move. And according to Sanofi, they see a standalone consumer health business as better equipped to pursue its own business strategy, as well as, you know, it can have its own capital allocation priorities rather than being dictated to by a group, by the wider group. And then, as we've, you know, previously spoken about, once the business moved on, that's going to generate funds, free up resources for the biopharma business, where the company's looking to invest further. Yes, as I noted, the way in which they're going to separate the consumer health business has not yet been decided. They said that they're reviewing potential separation scenarios, and analysts see a spin-off to existing shareholders the most likely route. But interestingly, in the past month, I don't know if either of you have come across this, but there's been some reports in the media that private equity are actually interested in acquiring Sanofi Consumer Healthcare. And JP Morgan has valued the firm at around 20 billion, which seems to be in line with other valuations that I've seen. Bayer, which I believe is slightly larger business, that the kind of numbers that were put on that were around the 20, 25 billion mark. So, you know, The spin-off was initially kind of seen as the most obvious route, but if there is interest there, you would imagine Sanofi would want to take a look at it to actually be able to get their hands on a really good injection of cash, you know, quicker than they would probably realize through a spin-off is going to be attractive to them, I would imagine.
And then Bayer have decided not to go down this route. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I think Malcolm hinted at it earlier. Bayer have gone the complete opposite way to its three largest competitors, which is fairly surprising. But I think, having looked at this, I think it's more about the state of the Bayer's other businesses. It says more about that than what it does about how Bayer thinks about consumer health. So to give a bit of context, there was a 6-month strategic review by the new CEO, came in last year, Bill Anderson, to have a look at the whole company, because Bayer's not been performing as well as they wanted for quite a while now. It's under a lot of pressure from shareholders. But he's concluded that if they offload consumer health now, it's not going to fix the problems that are facing the company, which are elsewhere. It's issues with loss of exclusivity in pharma, crop science, litigation, mounting debt, and then organizational issues, which is the only one really impacts on consumer health. They had a look at potentially what would be the benefits of offloading consumer health. And they would generate cash, which could pay down debt, but that move in itself come with costs, and then also take up time and energy that management feel would be better used solving the problems that they've got elsewhere. So what they've kind of said is, we're not going to exit consumer health now, but we're not saying never. So they've kind of given a timeline of 2 to 3 years when they're going to focus on solving the issues elsewhere. And leaving consumer pretty much as it is. But I'd be very surprised if they didn't come back to this if once they're able to turn the other businesses around, because, if all your competitors are seeing value and being able to generate significant money from doing these spin-offs or sales, you can see why it would be attractive to Bayer once it's in a better position. The other point, final point I just would like to make here, which I think is important to note, is that while Bayer is kind of going through this wider transition, which, as I said, won't affect the consumer health too much, other than in certain the way they're changing kind of management and organizational roles, the president of Bayer Consumer Health that's been in place for 6 years, Heiko Schipper, is departing for Unilever. And meaning that Bayer Consumer Health from 1st of May will have a new president called Julio Triana, who's been at Bayer 22 years. And he's mostly worked in pharma, but he does bring OTC experience as well. So it'd be interesting to see, once he gets his feet under the table, what he plans to do. Because the final point is Bayer Consumer Health has been performing very well, which I think is partly another reason for Bayer to keep hold of it at the moment. It's the one business which is performing, and it's producing steady cash flow for the wider group.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Over the Counter so far. Don't forget to follow Pharma Intelligence Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and TuneIn. Also, check out HPW Insight at hpw.sightline.com for all the latest health, beauty, and wellness news and intelligence. Keep listening. This episode continues now. So given that there are at least two big companies now gone down this path, has there been any impact so far on, like, say, a category level? I was thinking you might see some competition, because when you've gone alone, you've got your budget and you want to make the, you know, make this known. So there's a bit of investment in marketing in general, but also, you know, maybe some investment in the brands, make sure those results are coming back. Have you seen any competition in categories, like some of the major ones, maybe like pain relief or something like that, a bit more kind of fighting over market share, that kind of thing?
I'm not really aware of that, David. The competition represented by new sales spikes when there's a new product on the market, and in OTC, that's typically when you have an OTC switch. And there were a few companies, large companies that, like Haleon had the topical
Voltaro.
Yeah. And then they've done pretty well with that. That was good to for them to make that switch and get it on the market. Although they didn't have exclusivity. In fact, Perrigo had a generic equivalent about the same time Haleon launched it. I think the companies will remain focused on getting their products in front of consumers at retail, through displays or other things that they can use in stores. And it's not really anything. It's not a new focus. Consumer health has always been driving growth, and no small part comes down to getting your product in front of consumers, and making your product the one that they choose. As I said earlier, you're always competing on price, and so if a consumer buys the store brand for a third of the price, that's where a lot of competition is too. We're not talking about P&G, but P&G, they do a good amount of OTC and consumer and other consumer health things, and they say that they have premium and down market prices, so they acknowledge in their daily strategy that they've got to have the premium price product for the premium quality, but they also have to have the lower price product for some consumers.
So you mentioned switch. I'll just jump to the other question. You mentioned RX to OTC switch, or new product development. Do you think that we're going to see more of that kind of thing now, given that you've got that that independence of focus, or do you lose something also by not having that close relationship with a pharmaceutical company, where you've got maybe ingredients coming to the end of their patent and there's an incentive to want to switch there? What do you think, Malcolm?
That is a good question, David. I had not considered that before. For Johnson & Johnson, for instance, on their pharma side, they could have an ingredient that they see is should be available OTC. So, it's a hand-in-hand, very, very close collaboration. But now they're not the same company. A lot AstraZeneca comes to mind. They don't do OTC, but there's a lot of OTC switches that were that AstraZeneca originated as RX product. So yes, you do lose the in-house collaboration and the efficiency that would provide. But at the same time, pharma has a long history of companies licensing their RX ingredient to a third company to make OTC. So I suspect that will continue in the new landscape. But I will add that, you really can't emphasize enough how much of the new money, how much of the growth comes from new products, and the large number of new products are switches, and OTC will always be that way, at least as far as I know.
I think that's a good point. I think it's always going to be a massive part of innovation. Tom, what's your view on this when it comes to new product development and the trend towards spinning out independent companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think Malcolm's right when it comes to Switch in particular. You know, in-licensing from other pharma firms has been done before, and I think that's, you know, the way it's going to continue, especially for these standalone companies. You know, if you look at Bayer, which they're keeping the consumer health business in-house, but to my understanding, their last switch, US switch, which was Astepro Allergy, I can't remember the drug off the top of my head, but they in-licensed that from elsewhere. So, you know, even when they've got the in-house capabilities, they're still looking around, you know, what's available in the market. So I think that will carry on. But on the flip side of that, when Bayer's CEO Bill Anderson was talking about with analysts after they'd announced they were keeping the consumer business, he didn't speak a lot about it, but one of the few points he did make was the benefits of having the pharma and the consumer health businesses together and that shared expertise. I think he referenced, you know, expertise of talking to the FDA and working closely with the FDA, you know, being the benefits of having those pharma colleagues there as well to have an input. So I think you can look at it from both sides of the coin, you know, particularly when it comes to Switch. But yeah, as Malcolm says, Switch is going to continue to be, you know, the real work gold standard for growth and new product development. And as we know and have covered a lot in HBW, Sanofi is really focused on that with Cialis in the US. And I know as well, Bayer has got a couple of Switch programs ongoing in the US, but they have not so far revealed what those are. So yeah, look out for more news in that in HBW, I suppose.
Yeah, and specifically from Malcolm. Malcolm's definitely going to cover all of that in detail, I think. So one of the other things I was wondering, I've read that there's not a lot of consolidation in the market in terms of companies, actually, relative to maybe other industries. So do you think that this is something we'll see more of, consolidation of the bigger, you know, bigger slices of the market of these big companies, acquisitions, M&A activity? Do you think we're going to see more of that soon? Malcolm, do you want to, you got a view on this?
Okay. I really think, my sense, David, is that the larger companies are going to offload some of their lower selling brands, some of their lower selling lines. Because they're big, and there's no sense being big, just a sense of being big. And if you can get rid of other some products, do that. Of course, the smaller consumer health companies are always looking for brands to add to their portfolios. I just don't have a sense that Kenvue in the U.S., Kenvue or Haleon are really going. They really have to make what they have work more efficiently, or as efficiently as I thought it might would work, before they start looking at expanding.
Tom, what do you think? Are you seeing something similar on our side at the Atlantic?
Yeah, completely agree with Malcolm on this one. I think as you point out, Dave, yeah, the market's like very fragmented, so there's definitely opportunities for consolidation there. But if you look at the past, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5 years now, we just haven't seen big deals, really. You know, what you might call transformational M&A, where you've got one big company buying another one. And you know, there's certainly scope for it, because I think Haleon is the biggest player. I think they're still a bit below 10% of the global market. So it's, you know, it's not off the cards from a competition sense, but they've not gone after that. They've more prioritized these kind of smaller bolt-on deals. And I know from I've looked at, you know, Halion more closely than Kenvue. I know that M&A has not been one of their big priorities since they've kind of gone solo. And when they have spoken about M&A, they'd say that most of the time it's kind of looking at smaller things. And as Malcolm said, they've actually been going the other way and really like looking to trim the portfolio for, you know, non-core brands, you know, especially as I mentioned previously with Sanofi getting rid of over 100 brands. You know, what I'm seeing is the larger players kind of looking to add where they can in sort of growing categories like VMS, or to enhance their capabilities, such as with digital health. I think we've seen Bayer make a few kind of partnership deals recently. That seems to be the prevailing trend at the moment. So I would expect that to continue going forward.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think you're seeing more probably activity in getting into the kind of new opportunities that are presenting themselves, digital. And we talked about self-care. I mean, I think that's kind of the main advantage for being standalone, is that you can get into things that maybe a more traditional pharmaceutical company might not be that keen to get into. So, I suppose summing up, it sounds like with, you know, overall, this is the direction of travel with the big companies. Okay, Bayer has decided not to go down this route, but is still leaving that possibility open for the future. Sanofi is going to join Kenvue and Halion soon. So have we got any final thoughts, anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to add, Malcolm?
If I could add, and thank you, David, for having us back. We've largely talked about consumer health in the way of OTC drugs. And at least in the U.S., there are so many brands, so many companies offering, as Tom mentioned, VMS products, you know. So it's difficult. It's difficult, I think, for Halion or Kenvue to really expect to have a growth driver on the vitamin, mineral, and supplement side of their business, unless they do something different. You know, that may be something that they could change through addition, or maybe acquiring a company, you know, a small or a good brand in the VMS area, and that could boost their sales there. But as I said, we've talked about it largely on OTC, and there's a reason for that, because we think of OTC drugs with these companies, although they do have, you know, vitamin, mineral, and supplement products.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's going back to the kind of areas they might want to expand into a bit more. I think the Halion's got Centrum, isn't it? I think Centrum are quite a big brand. I don't know. I've seen that mentioned in the results, Tom, for Halion. But did you have any thoughts on that?
I was just going to say, you know, from this whole theme with companies spinning out, I think consumer health is just becoming a lot more visible as an industry, and then particularly among potential investors going forward, because previously it's been kind of hidden away within these bigger pharma companies. And from a, you know, selfish sort of journalist point of view, it's harder to get information on the smaller business. And when the analysts, investors are asking questions about the performance of the business, consumer health is often overlooked. Whereas now, a lot with Halion and Kenvue, that, you know, the whole business is set up to serve consumer health, which I think is only a good thing for the industry and should attract more investment. And as we've said, with the market being so ripe for consolidation, you know, there's a good possibility that could bring in, players that are not involved already, potentially FMCG players, which could, you know, in turn shake up the market. And that kind of goes hand in hand with I think what you mentioned earlier in terms of self-care as well. That's a kind of big trend people are more aware in terms of using VMS and things like that for preventative health. So I think, you know, this all feeds into that, and the future's looking pretty bright for consumer health from where I'm sitting anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think probably the only thing I would add as well is, given this visibility and you're talking about investment, I think that this is why we're seeing so much focus on sustainability in this industry, because I think, you know, this side is much more exposed to, you know, consumer concerns about sustainability, but also given it's closer to FMCG, this is something that the FMCG industry has had to deal with maybe a bit earlier. So it has accelerated some of these trends, I think, that we've seen before. But yeah, I think it's a really nice summary of the situation at the moment. I think this is definitely something that we'll come back to. We've mentioned that we're covering this ongoing, you know, we've got coverage of company results where this sort of thing is discussed, and then we'll be covering what's happening to these companies and also the ones that are thinking about it or where it's happening in the future. So I think make sure you keep reading HPW, and thanks for listening. Thanks, Malcolm and Tom, for joining me as well. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Over the Counter. Listen out for more episodes every 2 weeks and check out the further reading section of the article published on hpw.sightline.com for related news and intelligence. And don't forget to follow, share and comment on Sightline podcasts on the platform of your choice. See you next time.